Warning, due to some of the content of this podcast, there are a few subjects that are not appropriate for children. You'll be shocked and amazed. You have been warned.
Ward Hall just called me a showman. Son of a bitch!
This is episode 134 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. After listening to this interview again, I got to thinking. As a teenager, my first job ever was at the Orange County Fair selling do-it-yourself sandbirds. You know what sandbirds are? Those are those stretched Coke bottles filled with different colored sand with a golf tee as a nose and little feathers on the top. Not only did I sell at the booth, but throughout the day, I'd walk away and then come back as a regular customer, pretend to buy a sandbird, making amazing sand designs on the inside, because I knew how, and gather a crowd to sell more. At around 16 or 17, my favorite movie was a movie called Carney, starring Gary Busey as a midway clown that had his own way of making the regular folk angry so they'd spend more money. It's also the story of a love triangle between Busey, Jodie Foster, and Busey's manager, played by Robbie Robertson of the band. Busey convinces Jodie Foster's character to join the carnival and become a carny. Still one of my favorite movies to this day. I guess what I'm saying is that I love this subject. The subject is fascinating to me. Colorful characters, wild attractions, and hidden lingo only revealed to people in the know. But before we get to the interview, I need to tell you about my magic classes starting in March. I love building confidence in kids through the art of magic. All the classes are online, so I can be your child's magic teacher no matter what part of the world you live in. Make sure to register your child before March 1st so I can give you that huge discount and mail your magic materials. We really do use extraordinary fun to make great kids appear. Just send me a quick message at john@thevarietyartist.com and I'll give you all the details and the discount. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's the planet's foremost authority on sideshow. You saw him along with his Shocked and Amazed on the Learning Channel sideshow, Alive on the Inside, the Jerry Springer Show, Public Eye with Bryant Gumbel, and Fox Television's Fox Files, and so much more. Sword swallowers, fire eaters, regurgitators, human pincushions, torture kings, contortionists, and motordrome riders look to his Shocked and Amazed as the definitive source for all things strange and bizarre. All things sideshow. Variety artists, I give you James Taylor.
Yeah, well, I hope you're giving it to him. I don't know. I've been gibbed out before, so we'll see.
I just gave him as much as I could possibly give him, I think.
I know. It's just as frightening. I don't even know that guy.
Now, before we get into all the wild stories, why do they call it side show as opposed to like main show or front show?
Well, the deal is that sideshow has its origins anciently. As far as I'm concerned, people talk about, you know, the oldest form of human amusement. I would contend that it's novelty and variety exhibition. Yeah. You go back in history, believe me, as far back in the species as you want to go, there was some clown going, hey, let me show you this thing. Let me show you this weird thing I can do. Human life is four things, right? It's being born, eating to stay alive, screwing around to make the babies, because otherwise it's all entertainment.
Yeah.
And dying. That's it. So as far as I'm concerned, novelty and variety exhibition needs no huge production, needs no immense backstory. It's just, can you do something that's going to have people look at you and go, damn.
As you're talking, I'm just picturing in my head a caveman hitting himself in the head with a rock and going, oh, funny, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Hey, let me tell you, you know, sword swallowing, it's so ancient. You can see depictions of it in the tombs in Egypt, going back thousands of years before, you know, BC. There are actually in Native American tribal societies out in the Southwest, there were clans that were devoted entirely to sword swallowing.
Huh.
Literally, you can see like the old pictures, the old photographs of these people doing these things, of these first peoples doing these things. all this stuff is ancient. It goes back forever. It's only been a more, I'll say a more recent, going back a few hundred years, that it's kind of become codified and we sort of looked at it as sideshow. But sideshow is a term, and some of this terminology is somewhat mysterious in its origins, but sideshow as a term apparently originated in circus, because mm-hmm. when you'd go to the front door, which is the entryway to the circus grounds, you go to the front door, you'd go through the front door, which is the entryway to the circus, not to the big top,
yeah,
but to the midway, which is midway between the front door and the big top.
Ah.
All along that midway would be side shows, that is, shows on the side of the midway.
Mm.
And I mean, that's kind of one of the purported origins of the term. Of course, circus sideshow and carnival sideshow are somewhat different in a number of notable ways. You know, a circus sideshow in days of old, because none of them exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, circuses are having a hard time of it. God knows the sideshows of the circus are going to be even worse.
Yeah, a lot of them don't exist because of the ADA, right?
That's kind of, how do I want to put it? That's sort of like for public consumption, why they don't exist anymore.
Right.
And not to disparage the question or the proposed reason for, in all honesty, it's all economics. It has nothing to do with what people want to look at, because if what people were offended by is looking at the disabled, you'd have no television.
It's true.
Reality TV is driven by it. It's frightening how much of what used to be on the midway and used to be pitched differently is just on TV. Years ago, I did an episode of Jerry Springer. Producers had seen me on Live on the Inside, and they had seen me on there, and they're like, look, Jerry wants you on the show.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's great. These are the conditions, because I know what he wants. He wants old time freaks, and he wants me to be the sort of interlocutor for that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, fine. Well, here's the conditions. The performers, that is the people appearing on your show that he's interviewing, will be paid, because all those shows like Springer and all the rest of them, none of them want to pay you because, well, we're not supposed to pay people who come onto these shows, because they still look at themselves like they're news shows or something. This is showbiz. Come on, you pay the talent. So I was like, you got to pay them. There's going to be no audience, because an audience just means that Jerry's going to have to play to that audience above and beyond the people he's interviewing. And mm-hmm. I don't want that. I don't want like, oh, look at them people with no legs. No, screw that. No yeah. audience. The audience is going to be on the other end of a television set, not on the scene with you doing the interview. And the third condition is you're going to come to them. They're not coming to you. Well, that was fine by Jerry, because he's got a place in like Sarasota where he had to come to interview all the sideshow freaks of the golden age.
So he went and visited each of them as opposed to them coming to the studio?
Yep. He flew down and interviewed all of them. So he interviews Jeannie Tammany, the world's only living half girl, neither right. one of which things applies at this point in time, unfortunately, because yeah. she's very unfortunately long gone.
Yep.
He interviewed Priscilla Bajano, the monkey girl. And I mean, I arranged all these interviews for Springer's people. They met all those demands halfway. They paid all the people. They mm-hmm. came to them. There was no audience outside of whatever talent and friends that, you know, the people invited to stand around and watch Jerry Springer interview him. And Jerry Springer, at one point, he's talking to Jeannie Tammany, the half girl.
Yeah.
And he's talking to her, and she's, you know, sitting there, no legs, nothing from the, you know, nothing from like the trunk down.
Yeah.
And she was born that way. Oh, God, I love Jeannie. Jeannie was mom to me. She really was in the business. She was one of the first people that I ever met in the sideshow business, and she was gold. I love Jeannie to death.
Hmm.
So Springer's talking with her, he's interviewing, and he says, well, you know, a lot of people are saying that television is the new sideshow.
Well, it's kind of true.
Well, wait for it. And okay. she's like, oh, no. And he just kind of looks at her, and she goes, well, when we did sideshow back in my day, we were good. And he just kind of looked at her and he sort of like gets his grin on. And it was like, yeah, that ain't going to make it to the episode. You damn right it didn't.
He's making it to this episode, though.
Yeah, it's like, that's an outtake. Well, there's apparently an outtake tape. I've never seen it, but the outtake tape apparently has that and a number of other things in there, including Jerry stepping in cat crap, because there was a million cats around that damn Giants camp.
Wait, there's film somewhere of Jerry Springer stepping in cat poo.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
I can't remember who it was that brought a nail board to the interview with Jeannie. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants to get in on the act, right? So Jerry's like, oh, I'd love to lay down on the nail board. I've never done that. Yeah. So he stretches out on the nail board, and I and one of his production people is helping him get down to it, and he's laying down. He goes, oh, this isn't too bad. And so we're both helping him back up off the nail board, and he missteps. He got a reminder of how many cats that property had on it. And he's like, I think I just stepped in cat crap. And all of us are laughing. It's like, what are you going to do? And he was laughing, too. I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You just step in.
A lot of people ask me, well, what's Jerry like? And I was like, you want to know that kind of, it comes across as that sort of phony baloney affect on TV? That goes all the way to the bone for Jerry. I mean, he's that guy. He's never not on. But he understands that it's all showbiz. And he understands where the BS begins and ends. And he's the guy that can be made fun of and makes fun of himself because he knows the business. He knows what it's about. And he knows it's all like, how do you keep people glued to a screen?
Exactly. How do you make the most amount of money? That's really what it boils down to.
GTFM, as they say in the business.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
And Jerry gets it. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of people just in the business have no problem with Jerry. They get it. He knows that reality TV is reality in quotes. Nobody wants to pay to hear about your happiness or pay to see you live. Oh, wow, I just watched somebody with no legs fix breakfast. Well, that might actually be an act if you could hype it up. You want to see the armless guy roll a cigarette with his feet or with his lips. You want to see that stuff because, oh, my God, this is so other than what my life day to day is.
It's much more interesting to watch that than it is the average guy rolling a cigarette.
Oh, yeah. The essence of all of it is, what is mundane to somebody 1,000 miles away that here I can sell as exotic? Mm. If you can do that, you got it made. When I had the American Dime Museum, an institution that I created with my late partner, Dick Horn, in Baltimore, one of the first things I found out in getting into the sideshow business, if you can put across something you have on show and thereby draw audience, thereby make a buck, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what you say about it. Barnum's line was, it's not the attraction, it's the story of the attraction.
True. I'm a big fight fan. I watch the fights a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you just watch fights without knowing the fighters, it doesn't really matter. It's fun to watch a fight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you know the story behind each person and you're rooting for one or the other, then it becomes more interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all a show. It's a big show. And it's one of the reasons why McMahon could get yanked up in front of Congress and grilled about, well, you know, are these guys using steroids? And he was like, okay, let me get something straight with you knuckleheads here on the Hill.
You're talking about Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon of what used to be WWF, right?
Yeah. And he said, in sports, you don't want steroids. And you're going to come down hard on that. But in showbiz, you don't want to get into the showbiz because then you're going to have to go after Hollywood. And guess where all of your contributors are going to go? Away from your bank accounts. Yeah. So you better lighten up with pro wrestling because it's show business.
Here's something people don't know about me. In the 60s, my dad was a professional wrestler.
Are you kidding me?
No, this is the truth. And I have pictures of him holding me up as maybe a two-year-old. I'm a two-year-old. And he's maybe, I don't know, 25 or 30. And he was the guy that would travel from town to town and lose the match to whoever is the big guy of the town.
Oh, so he was the heel.
Yeah, always, always. So he'd go in, people would boo him.
That's killer.
He has a great story about Freddie Blassie.
Oh, yeah.
He was wrestling one of Freddie Blassie's guys. And my grandmother, his mom, thought it was the realest thing ever.
Oh, no.
One of Freddie Blassie's guys, I guess, starts beating on my dad, or what looks like beating on my dad. And my grandma is having a heart attack out in the audience going, oh, he's hurting my son. He's hurting my son. And then Freddie Blassie runs over with his cane and grabs my dad's ankle with his cane and knocks him down and pulls him down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And my grandma's like, no, it's horrible.
You know what? I can't believe they didn't grab your grandma and drag her down to ringside. Come on. They missed the moment. Man, that would have made, the audience would have gone nuts.
Yeah, no kidding. They probably were. I mean, I don't know. This is in the late 60s. So
pro wrestling's another one. I mean, pro wrestling was another form of sideshow back in the day. I mean, the old at shows, the old athletic shows. The Midway used to be a tough place to be. The stuff that I have seen audiences do to talent.
Give me an example of something that someone has done that's crazy.
Oh, Lord. So it's my first year. I'm down in Florida, down in Central Florida. I'm down there in Gibsonton, and I'm at the Florida State Fair up in Tampa. So it's February. You know, it's still warm down there. Mm-hmm. And I had been advised to go to the fair and check out whatever was there. Well, in the early 90s, there was not a lot of show at the Florida State Fair. It's still a touch and go kind of game, but there was really not much in the early 90s. And I ran into a couple, Bob and Anita Leibold.
Wait, you ran into who?
Bob and Anita Leibold.
I thought you said Bob and Needle Eyeball. I was like, oh, I got to hear about that.
You know, I've actually seen Penn and Teller do that act. So it's like, yeah, you haven't lived till you've been with Teller, and he does one of those like spoon popping his eyeball into a cup of coffee deals. It's really sort of unnerving to watch, but it really catches your eye. Anyway,
pardon the expression.
Yes. So sure enough, I go to the Midway. You know, I go to the fair, go to the Florida State Fair there in Tampa. Yeah. I'm walking the Midway and I run into Bob and Anita, and I'd never met them. I hadn't been prepped to meet them. They had no idea who I was. So I go into the Midway, and there they got their giant alligator show and their snake show.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're talking out in front of the show, and Bob is working me relentlessly. Now you got to figure, this is my very first days actually interviewing people in person, face to face, dealing with carnival people right there, not over the phone. Some of them sort of knew of me, but I was just another guy, another writer, another rube, another schmuck who was probably going to report badly on them, which I had no intention of doing.
Yeah.
So Bob is working me relentlessly. He's like, why don't you go over there and take tickets? You know, go over there and take work the ticket box. And I'm like, Bob, when I started doing this project, I wanted there to be a line, and there was a line between me and the people I dealt with. It's not meant badly. It's just meant to be like, I can't get into the business. I shouldn't be getting into the business as an oral historian. That's not a path I want to travel on.
Yeah.
Finally, we go out back behind the shows, and we're in the backyard, and they've got a picnic table sitting out there that they carried around with them. And, you know, it's where they did their meals during the day when the weather was nice. And they got, you know, like their lunch out, and I'm sitting around talking with them. And at some remove across the fields from one end of the parking lot, you see like this gaggle of kids. And I'll say kids, but they were in their teens somewhere, late teens maybe.
Okay.
And they're walking across sort of this expanse of grass behind the Midway. And as they're walking, you can see them sort of angling off, and they're walking toward us.
Okay.
Which there was no reason to do. And they're cutting this corner, and they're angling closer and closer and closer to us. And I can see Bob and Anita sort of tensing up.
Mm-hmm.
And they got about a dozen feet, 15, 20 feet away. And one of these jackasses looks at us and he goes, I thought you were eating something here.
So they went to take your food or something?
No, they just come up and they're going to like crack wise. And it's like, what are we doing to you? We're just sitting here at a picnic table.
Yeah.
But he's going to come over here and be some, you know, smarmy, sarcastic little ass. Yeah. And as soon as he says, they sort of angle off and start walking away and walk off. And I look at him and I'm like, Jesus, Bob, that was pretty damn rude of them.
Strange little interaction.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you think that was rude? He says, you ought to see what we have to put up with on the midway every day. He said, just yesterday, which was a Sunday, he said we had a gaggle of little old ladies coming. He said, little old church ladies. He said, fresh out of church. He said, and I knew it was going to be trouble when they went into that damn show. He said, and they weren't in there 2 minutes. And I heard this kaboom. He said, and I walked in there and one of these little old ladies had taken her pocketbook and she had smashed the glass on the front of that one of these snakes. He said, and she was going on about Satan. He said, I ran her old ass right out of that show. And he said, it's a battle to keep those kind of people out of your show. He said, because they all want to do it. They're all going to do it, but they can't handle it. They've worked themselves up to the point where they can't just look at some snakes. What's the problem? You pay your 50 cents, you go in, you see what essentially is a zoo show on a carnival midway.
Yeah.
And instead, you're going to act like an idiot. One of the secrets of the midway, unfortunately, is that carnival is all about giving you license, because that's what, on average, having fun is. It's the license to do something wild and wacky that in your day-to-day life, at the job, even with your friends, you're not going to be able to do and not look like a jackass.
Right.
The problem is the carnival is probably one of the most extreme environments you can go to and be given license to have all that fun.
Yeah, it seems to me the big difference between midway, sideshow, all that, and TV is that midway and sideshow, it's in your face. They're saying, here, look over here. This is what this is. Yep. Whereas TV kind of sneaks it in. They try to say, oh, it's fine. It's just reality TV. It's just a TV program. It's no big deal.
Well, it's like I was in Ward Hall, the inimitable Ward Hall, you know, may he rest in peace.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't know Ward Hall, does he have a nickname, Ward Hall?
Yeah, King of the Sideshows.
King of the Sides, and that's exactly what he is, King of the Sideshows.
Back in the early 90s, when I gave him that name, nobody refuted me. Not a soul refuted me.
You gave him that name?
Huh?
You gave him that name?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
When I was first getting into this, after Jerry Farrow and my mod pretty much goaded me into it, that and the murder of Grady Stiles, and just along with Jerry and my ma, all this was around the same time. And it was like, damn, somebody ought to be getting this down in print. Somebody ought to be getting to these people before they're gone.
Is all of this how you started? Shocked and amazed?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. It was all a matter of me finally getting off of my high end literary butt. Because, I mean, I started out as a poet and a fiction writer and creating literary magazines and poetry reading series and, you know, reading all over the planet, poetry and all the rest of it. It all stopped speaking to me. Jerry and my ma and all this other stuff going on in the showbiz, it was like, you know, kind of kicking my ass out of writer's block. It gave me a different kind of mission, a different kind of target. That I sort of went at full bore, and that's part of the reason I created Shocked and Amazed. Now, originally it was supposed to have been a book.
Yeah.
And then it segued into a journal, because I realized that if I did a book when it was done, I was done. What was I going to do with these people? And I love these people. They're hilarious. They're it's like the old sideshow line. You don't have to be crazy in the business, but it helps.
So what is it? Is it a monthly thing, or is it
As I realized pretty quickly, listening to the way a lot of the show people worked with wordplay and all the rest of it, I call it a periodical, because it's published whenever I get around to it.
Periodically.
Yeah, periodically. I got so much attention for Shocked and Amazed. See, the thing to know about Sideshow, and to remember at Sideshow, it's like when you go out there, if you happen to see a banner line in front of a show, you can be guaranteed that you're going to see something that's represented by those banners. It will not be what you see on that banner. I mean, no way. I mean, come on.
So it says alligator boy or whatever. Yes. And it's a guy full of scales. You're going to walk in and expect that. And you're going to see something that alludes to that.
Well, you'll see a guy with scaly skin, but you're not going to see a human head on the body of an alligator unless somebody has constructed that attraction. They've gaffed one up. Ah. That's the way you're going to see that stuff. And, you know, it's like Ward Hall's line used to be. He says, you know, some of it is really real. Some of it is really fake, but it's all really good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was referred to you by a couple of guys that are show guys.
You have the nerve to call them guys? Come on.
I don't know. They are called the monsters of schlock, right?
Yeah, they're monsters, man. Come on.
They are the monsters. I interviewed them on episode 122 of The Variety Artist. I called it too outrageous, too dangerous, and too extreme. Burnaby Orbach's and Sweet Pepper.
Klopek. Yep. Sweet Klopek. Pepper Klopek.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
I got to tell you how I met them. Oh, I got to tell you how I met them.
Okay. Well, before you do that, I got to tell you, you got to listen to that episode. It's a terrific episode.
Oh, I will.
Burnaby holds the world record for pulling a truck.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. But it's not just pulling a truck. It's pulling a truck with hooks in his back. Sweet Pepper holds the world record for mouse traps on his tongue.
Yep.
It's crazy, crazy. So how did you meet those guys?
Sweet Pepper and another performer named, I'm losing it. Anyway, okay, story. How I met the monsters of schlock.
Yeah.
I've got a place up in Canada. I've had it for decades. And it's up on that North Shore. It's up, you know, looking out across the Prince Edward Island. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's Murder, She Wrote is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy who doesn't deserve to own that property. But one of the things that happens every year up in Halifax, which is only about an hour and a half from me, is the World Busking Festival.
Yeah.
I used to go to it every year if I was up there when it was going on, and I would go the whole length of the show because it's the entire Halifax waterfront. I mean, it's enormous, and it's just all of these buskers from all over the world. I mean, Australia, New Zealand, Asia, you know, all over Canada, the U.S., every Europe, everywhere. It's the end of my day, and I'm at the far end. It's these two guys, and they're out there, and they're setting up. And their setup is essentially their bally. It's their opening. They're using the fact that they're dragging props out to start the show. Now, for those in the audience who don't understand how difficult that is, I've watched talent try to pull that off and fail miserably because they're just watching you drag your crap out. They're watching you drag out props. How in the hell do you make that entertaining? The monsters sure did. They're dragging this crap out. And a lot of it is really enigmatic because it's a prop that you don't understand until they start to use it and use it how they're using it. So they're dragging the stuff out and they're screwing with each other and they're doing. And meanwhile, what's that do? People are starting to clump around because they're wondering what's going on. And pretty soon they've got a crowd of a couple of hundred people. You know, Orbach looks around, Sweet Pepper looks around. They go, oh, look at this. You're all here, right? And they go through the act. And they were drop dead hysterical. By the time the act is over, literally, Sweet Pepper with Orbach, of course, narrating what's going to go on. They've gotten this father and his little kid out of the tip. Out of the audience, out of the crowd, gotten them over there. And this little girl couldn't have been older than like 7, 8 years old. She's going to throw darts at Sweet Pepper's ass.
Oh, no.
And does. And the father's laughing and the little kid. Yeah. I'm like, you know, you got to really own this crowd to pull this act off. Because this is a rude ass, pun intended, a rude ass act to be doing in front of a crowd of a couple of hundred people. So they finish up and they're making their money because it's all like hat money. You know, people are like giving them money.
Yeah.
And what I would do whenever I went to the Buskers Festival, the International Buskers Festival, I'd always take along copies of Shocked and Amazed and lard them around to the people who were doing the work, the talent. So I walk up to them and a couple of copies of Shocked and Amazed. And I was like, look, you know, I just want to give you, and they were like, oh, wow. Oh, you're that guy. And I'm like, well, I'm a guy.
You're that guy.
And this is my journal, and I'd like you guys to have them. And so my first question to him was, look, how long you guys have been busking? To me, it was screamingly obvious. They knew how to control a crowd.
Yeah.
They knew how to generate. They knew how to, as they say in the business, gather a tip, get an audience to crowd around you. And they both look at me sort of like, what? And Orbach is like, well, we do club work, man. We don't busk. And I was like,
really?
Excuse me? You got that crowd together and you do club work? Wow. How did you even know how to do this? And they're like, well, we just got out here and we started doing stuff that we thought might work.
So they were just messing around.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you guys are goddamn geniuses, man. If you can come out cold and generate a 200 body crowd, even in the international, because I mean, I went from spot to spot. And granted, there's a schedule that they give you when you come onto the grounds.
Yeah.
Go to the waterfront. Here's a free schedule of who is performing where. You see something like the Monsters of Schlock. Ooh, outrageous entertainment. Well, you know, it's going to draw some people. Mom, dad, and the kids? I don't know. But they were there because they saw what Sweet Pepper and Orbach were doing. And it was like, huh, I wonder what these guys are going to do.
Wow.
That's what got the crowd together. And that's what made them their money.
I want some fan questions. Because you have, I put it.
Yeah. Give me something to convince people that I've actually been listening.
Yeah.
Instead of running my mouth.
See, every time I interview somebody new, I put on my Facebook that they can ask questions of the person I'm interviewing, which happens to be you. All right. So the first one, Keith Nelson. You know Keith? Of course you do.
I've known Keith Nelson and Stephanie Munson. I've known them for years. They're great people. And it's a great show. Bindle's the Family Circus. If you've never been to a show, you're missing it. You're really missing.
Yeah. And Keith Nelson, he's the executive director.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, he created the whole thing. It's his thing.
Yeah. He and Stephanie. Yep. Yep. They had a show before the Bindle's the Family Circus was created. They used to call Fireplay. And the two of them did an extended fire performance. You see a lot of people doing that nowadays, but back in the day, it was them. They were it.
Well, let me tell you his question. His big question is, love me some James Taylor.
Poor bastard.
That's it.
That's his question?
That was it.
Oh, man. Then I have a counter question. Why, man? Why? No.
Okay, we'll go to the next one then. Louis Fox. You know Louis?
Oh, Louis.
Okay, everybody knows Louis. Louis's one-man sideshow out of Seattle, Washington says, and by the way, I interviewed both Louis and Keith in different podcasts, and they have great stories.
Oh, yeah.
Louis, when I interviewed him, he has a human foot in his closet.
I'm sure he does.
So his question to you is similar to that. Ask him his favorite oddity he's ever personally owned. That was his question.
I don't know whether I should say this for sort of public consumption.
I can cut it out.
Well, geez, given the fact that the attraction is ancient as much as certainly grandfathered in, mm-hmm. A tiny bit of backstory, if you will, and this can turn into an enormous jackpot if you're willing to put up with it. But I would say arguably the most famous pickled punk, and pickled punks you can see in any medical museum. They are fetal remains.
Yep.
In jugs of formaldehyde. There used to be entire sideshows mounted around. There were what they call life shows and freak baby shows and such and bottle shows. You do not see them on Carnival Midways anymore. The showman killed them, unfortunately.
The only reason I know about that at all is because they were featured in American Horror Story on TV.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, they were hugely popular in their era. They were created, the life shows were created by a showman by the name of Lou Dufour, who was known in the carnival business as the King of the Unborn Shows.
Hmm.
Lou Dufour was an enormously important showman in the 20th century. He's the guy who cut the deal to get the Ubangis from Africa into the show biz over here in the States, as well as the long neck women of Burma. He's that guy. He's the one cut those deals.
Okay.
He had life museums in Niagara Falls, and he had one in Florida. The one in Niagara Falls was the last one to give up the ghost, if you will. Lou Dufour understood something about the presentation of an attraction. World's Fair, we're always littered with his shows. There's a notoriously famous postcard from the 1933 Century of Progress show in Chicago, and it's like in the Egyptian Hall, the magic show, a pavilion on one side, and on the other side, right next to it, is a two-headed baby show. And it's an enormous giant stork on the front of the show, carrying the basket, sort of the swaddling, with a two-headed baby waving to the crowd out on the midway.
Do you have that? Is that your...
Well, wait for it.
Okay, I'm waiting. I'm dying here.
I do not have that two-headed punk because, to my knowledge, that pickled punk was never photographed and documented. Although I have seen what I was told was that punk, to my knowledge, it was never actually photographed in place in the show. So proving definitively that that two-headed punk was Lou Dufour's 1933 Century of Progress show punk is impossible. You just have to believe, well, for me, it was the words of the gentleman from whom I got my attraction, old showman by the name of Captain Harvey Lee Boswell. Mm-hmm. Captain Boswell was partnered at one point in time with Lou Dufour. He and Lou had inarguably more pickled punks between the two of them than any other private owners of such medical attractions in the world. I mean, it was hundreds of specimens, literally hundreds of specimens, more than any medical collection, including DC and the Mütter Museum and the Harvard Medical Collection, more than all of them. However, ownership of such things, having things in private hands, is not generally illegal if the things are as much as ancient and old-timey and grandfathered in. It's a little more difficult nowadays, and you shouldn't be dragging this crap across straight state lines anyway, because you run into all those kinds of legal limits and boundaries you shouldn't be crossing. Yeah. However, having said that, I have seen that what is purported to be that two-headed punk. Captain Boswell had it, but Captain Boswell had what to me was a much more important attraction. And that was another two-headed baby, and that was Rob Bob. And Rob Bob arguably is the most famous two-headed punk of the 20th century, because if what you do is look up two-headed baby, I guarantee you will see a picture of a guy in a white orderly's smock, like dressed in medical scrubs. Yeah. And he's this guy, he's kind of one of these sort of Kirk Douglas kind of guys, you know, his hair, like his mane of hair combed straight back and real stern, clean shaven looking guy. And he's holding this two-headed baby. Obviously, it's a preserved specimen. You just look at it, you know, it's a baby out of a jug.
Wow.
That baby is Rob Bob. There's another picture of Captain Boswell, same outfit, same, you know, like white hospital orderlies, you know, on. And he's holding a seal baby. That seal baby is Stevie the Seal Boy. I know who owns Stevie. And I got Rob Bob.
Oh, you have Rob Bob?
It was 10 years working to get that punk. I swear to God, Captain Harvey offered me that punk in the very early days before I'd even published volume one of Shocked and Amazed. He offered me that punk and the Fred Johnson. And Fred Johnson's one of those unbreakable names in sideshow banners. He's the king of the sideshow banner painters in his day. Offered me the banner and the punk for like so little money. It was heartbreaking. And I'm like, Captain, if I take the money to buy this punk, I got something I got to kind of hide, because most people don't understand those attractions.
Sure.
Where are you going to put the banner? On the ceiling of your bedroom? I mean, banners are like 8 by 9 feet.
Where are you keeping those, the banner and the punk? Well, I don't know if you want to, I don't know if you want to say it publicly.
Let me put it this way. Everything is safely stored.
Well, thanks, James, for joining me today. That was really fun. Now, do you have somebody or some sort of social media or anything you want to plug before I let you go?
Oh, yeah, geez. the best thing one can do is go to shockedandamazed.com, and you'll see all the currently in print volumes of Shocked and Amazed, the world's only journal devoted to weirdness as entertainment. But you'll also see something else that's kind of near and dear to all of our hearts here at Shocked and Amazed Central. And that's the new collector's edition of Shocked and Amazed. It's the best of the first 9 volumes of Shocked and Amazed. Got a lot of material that for those who might have purchased the original best of that was published back in the early aughts, this has added material. I can't remember the exact page count. It's, oh my God, look at that. It's almost 400 pages.
Oh my.
Big interviews with old time sideshow people. Pretty much the golden age encapsulated in nearly 400 pages on the novelty and variety exhibition business, including things that go all the way back into the 1800s, things that are new and shocking nowadays.
That's great. So they just go to shockedandamazed.com?
Shockedandamazed.com. Of course, if you look up Shocked and Amazed on Facebook, you'll get to it. You'll Excellent. Find me as well. The fun thing about the Facebook connection is that pretty much every day we run half a dozen fun things, alternate showbiz links that you can go to and be entertained and amused.
And shocked and amazed.
In this era of being nearly housebound, most of us are.
Boy, you're not kidding.
That's a biggie right there. I guess I should plug the other thing in which I'm kind of featured. Jim Moore's Vaude Visuals, Roses, Royal Midgets, and Other Little People of Vaudeville.
Mm.
I wrote a foreword for it, which is titled It Means ...
Is this a book? This is a book you're talking about?
It's really one of the only books solely devoted to midget villages.
Thanks, James. And to all my variety artists, remember to register your kids in my March Magic classes. Just send me a message at john@thevarietyartist.com. Tell me you'd like to register your kids and I'll give you that huge discount. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.